Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. The state of California has declared San Diego County a disaster area after last weekend's heavy rains. We'll have information about how you can report storm damage to the county. We'll also have some shocking information on a bridge that collapsed on a major Southern California freeway, highlighting our state's failing infrastructure problems. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, held its national meeting in San Diego this week. Hear why thousands of people came out to protest ALEC, including small business groups, environmentalists, labor unions, and civil rights advocates. Plus, we'll have tape of State Senator Joel Anderson defending ALEC's policies. Hear about a sexual predator placed in Hacumba Hot Springs, who is now back in custody. Learn why the county is protesting a decision by the U.S. Forest Service not to land its firefighting air tankers at the Ramona Air Base. Hear about an upcoming town hall meeting on the drought that Assemblyman Brian Jones will be holding. On Destination East County, learn about some festive events coming up this week, including hikes and hops on Vulcan Mountain, Pine Valley Days, and an evening of music in the garden. Plus, we'll have previews of upcoming events from A Sip of Julian to Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy. From Public News Service, learn why California ranks among the lowest states in the nation for the well-being of children. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with John Bolthouse from the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College. He'll have some water-saving tips for you, as well as some information on exciting events and classes coming up at the garden. And if you're traveling this summer, we have some information from the sheriff about free vacation checks that you can request to protect your home. On Green Scene, hear which congressional members from San Diego got an award for protecting national parks and which ones got rated zero for failing to protect our public resources. On Bookshelf, we'll replay our interview with Timothy Daniels, author of an ongoing investigation. And then we'll have a long-range weather outlook for what to expect this winter. Plus, we'll tell you about some changing attitudes toward working women in America and why we still have a long way to go to help working mothers. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom has issued a proclamation declaring a state of emergency for five Southern California counties, including San Diego, due to damage from severe storms starting July 18th that caused flash flooding, mudslides, and fires ignited by lightning strikes, resulting in damage to roads, highways, and other infrastructure, and the evacuation of residents. The emergency declaration applies to Imperial, Kern, Los Angeles, Riverside, San Bernardino, and San Diego counties. Newsom specifically mentioned the I-10 bridge collapse and ordered Caltrans to seek immediate assistance through the Federal Highway Administration's Emergency Relief Program for help to repair the bridge as well as highways in all five counties. The County of San Diego has asked residents to report damage. Lieutenant Governor Newsom made the proclamation in the absence of Governor Jerry Brown, who is traveling overseas and meeting with Pope John Francis regarding climate change issues. The state disaster declaration sets the stage to potentially obtain federal disaster declaration and financial aid for impacted residents from the federal government. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is DeVario Bell with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The remnants of Hurricane Dolores created record rainfall in San Diego County over the weekend, drenching some areas with up to 4 inches of rain. If your property or small business sustained damage from the weekend's heavy rains and flooding, the county would like to help estimate rain damages in our region. The County Office of Emergency Services is asking storm-affected residents to complete a short damage survey form that will assist the county in collecting damage information and associated costs from the weekend's heavy rains and flooding. You can find a damage survey online at sdcountyrecovery.com. The information gathered from the surveys will be used to estimate total damages countywide and will determine if enough damages occurred to qualify the region for federal disaster assistance, such as low-interest disaster loans from the Small Business Administration for those who are uninsured or underinsured. Completing the form does not guarantee a disaster declaration, is not a claim, and is not a guarantee that the property owner will be eligible to receive disaster assistance. For additional information, visit sdcountyrecovery.com or email oes@sdcounty.ca.gov. If your property was damaged by the storm and you need immediate assistance, you can also contact the American Red Cross at 858-414-8051 or the Salvation Army at 619-231-6000. Other local services may be available by calling 211 San Diego.
A bridge collapse Sunday that shut down Interstate 10 between Palm Springs and the Arizona border occurred during heavy rains. The cause of the failure, however, may well be outright neglect. Built in 1967, the bridge was listed as functionally obsolete in the 2014 National Bridge Inventory, one of hundreds of bridges across California that was listed as being in need of replacement or repair. State Senator Jeff Stone of Riverside has issued a press release stating that the incident further illustrates the rapidly deteriorating state of California's roads and highways and the urgent need to rebuild our state's crumbling infrastructure. That bridge on eastbound I-10 was completely washed away, and the westbound bridge was severely undermined as well. A truck on the bridge, when it collapsed, plunged into the swiftly flowing water below. A passenger escaped, but the driver had to be rescued by firefighters who had to risk their own lives to pull the motorist to safety. Caltrans has issued a commuter alert advising travelers to avoid travel on I-10 in the desert area midway between Coachella and Arizona until further notice. Recommended detours include Interstate 8 through San Diego's East County. Interstate 10 is one of the largest roadways for hauling goods to regional ports, manufacturing facilities, warehouses, and distribution centers. The route along I-10 between Coachella and Arizona averages about 27,000 vehicles every day, according to Caltrans. Caltrans reports that once damage assessments are completed, an emergency contract will be needed to make repairs to the interstate, repairs that will now be far more costly than if they had been done before the bridge collapsed. There is no estimate yet for when the highway may be repaired and reopened. Meanwhile, Caltrans advises motorists traveling in desert areas to be prepared for storms, carry sturdy shoes, warm clothing, water, and a fully charged cell phone. Also make sure that your gas tank is full. Many motorists found themselves stranded when the bridge collapsed, forced to turn around with no place to take shelter. Caltrans also warns that if you do encounter running water while driving, turn around, don't drown. 2 feet of running water can lift a large vehicle such as a bus, and just 6 inches of running water can sweep a person away. Senator Stone says it's time for California to take action to repair its crumbling infrastructure before the next tragedy occurs. Maintenance and repairs of California's bridges and highways have been neglected far too long, he says, adding, millions of taxpayer dollars approved by voters to build and maintain our bridges and highways have been siphoned off to programs that have nothing to do with infrastructure, transportation, or highway safety. Stone says he is calling on the governor and legislative Democrats to join with Republicans in supporting legislation that will ensure transportation dollars collected from California taxpayers are spent where they are desperately needed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
While thousands of people protested this week outside the American Legislative Exchange Council's National Convention in San Diego, State Senator Joel Anderson, the statewide chair of ALEC, said he is proud to have San Diego post ALEC's National Convention, adding,
ALEC takes on difficult, complicated issues and offers free market solutions because legislators exchange. That's why the name is American Legislative Exchange Council. We exchange ideas. So things they're doing in Florida and they're doing in Maryland, they're doing in North Dakota, we look at those as possible solutions for California. We've had several bills, I don't know them off the top of my head, that were ALEC ideas that were passed in Sacramento.
As for the thousands of protesters, Anderson said derisively,
they simply don't like free market ideas, and there's a naysayer in every crowd. And unfortunately, they use their voice to squash everyone else's voice.
As for criticisms of secret dealings behind closed doors, Anderson retorted,
you know what, we can't respond to every whack job in the world that has all these kooky ideas.
And insisted the process is not as secretive as critics claim. Reporter Ken Stone with Times of San Diego then pointed out to Anderson that media had been denied access to cover some key sessions.
Here, Ken, you are at ALEC filming. I'm sorry. That doesn't fit the narrative.
Okay, but I am allowed to attend plenary sessions and workshop sessions, but not, you know, networking or private room, you know, get-togethers. That is apparently
theoretically what stuff is done. NCLS and some of the other organizations, do they have the same policies? So that's not uncommon. That's very common. You can't have a press person in the bathroom with you when you're using the urinal. So I'm sorry. It's not. And by the way, when you are trying to. Although I've not been part of a conspiracy, I would think that when you have a conspiracy, you don't want the press on the premises at all.
The protesters included a local small business organization, labor, environmental, human rights, and political reform organizations. They contend that secretive actions conducted behind closed doors by ALEC result in laws that hurt small businesses in America and weaken protections for workers, the environment, and civil rights. ALEC asked state legislators to introduce model legislation aimed at protecting corporate and business interests, but not all business groups are on board. The Neighborhood Market Association, or NMA, which represents market across San Diego County, spoke out against ALEC this week. The political process cannot turn to a backdoor process, said Mark Arabo, the president of NMA. When large corporations are in a position to influence legislation in a way that undermines the voice of small businesses and the average citizen, we most certainly have a problem. States like California must be seeds of democracy, and the U.S. organizations like ALEC only undermine statewide and nationwide democratic values. A press release from NMA criticized ALEC as being infamous for creating statewide generic legislation, making it more difficult to sue corporations, as well as creating voter ID laws and public-to-private legislation to privatize jails and schools. Doug Moore, vice president of the American Federations of State, County, and Municipal Employees and president of AFSCME, United Domestic Workers Union, says ALEC works to pass laws that make the lives of Americans harder. We do things differently here in California. We are raising the minimum wage, protecting our families, educating our children, and respecting the rights of all Californians. The labor leader faults ALEC for creating what he calls the anti-worker model legislation, including the right to work scam, and building a network of right-wing state legislators who want to slash wages, cut retirement, weaken health and safety, harm the environment, and destroy the middle class. San Diego 350.org joined the protests, blaming ALEC for contributing to climate change with its policies that promote the use of fossil fuels and fight efforts to restrict greenhouse gas emissions. Ray Lutz, founder of Citizens Oversight here in East County, also joined in Stop ALEC protests outside the convention. He calls ALEC a pay-to-play operation where corporations buy a seat and vote on task force to advance their legislative wish list and get tax breaks for donation, effectively passing these lobbying costs onto taxpayers. Thus, corporations effectively have a seat at the table, voting with legislators to approve model bills, Lutz contends. Two Republican presidential candidates, Mike Huckabee and Scott Walker, also address ALEC. A third, Ted Cruz, canceled citing legislative priorities in Washington, D.C. ALEC told Times of San Diego that Hillary Clinton was also invited but declined. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
The U.S. Forest Service is refusing to fly its newest air tankers in and out of the Ramona Air Attack Base, and the Board of Supervisors is turning to the White House for help. On Tuesday, supervisors voted unanimously to support a motion made by Chairman Bilhorn and Supervisor Diane Jacob to appeal the decision to the Obama administration. With the high-risk fall fire season approaching, they say flying the next-gen tankers in and out of Ramona could help save lives and protect property. The Forest Service claims the rural base, the region's aerial firefighting hub, can't handle the tankers. But county and state fire officials disagree. CAL FIRE last week tested the same type of tanker in Ramona and reported no problems. And the county forwarded us a video of that tanker landing at the Ramona Air Base as proof. Air support from tankers is crucial to stop wind-driven, fast-moving fires from spreading out of control, as the 2003 Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms that ravaged our region made clear. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jawan Armstrong with a Crime Beat Report. Gary Gene Snavely, a sexually violent predator, has violated the terms of his release and has been removed from Hakuma Hot Springs. He is now in the Sheriff's Department custody and may be returned to a state hospital. Supervisor Diane Jacob issued this strong statement at the news. This monster never belonged in the community in the first place, Jacob says. Word that he violated the terms of his release comes as no surprise and is the latest proof that sexually violent predators have no place in Hakumba Hot Springs or any other community. What makes this even more outrageous is that it's not the first time Snavely has broken the rules of his placement, as Jacob, who calls for Snavely to be locked up for good this time. Snavely was released into Hakumba Hot Springs over strong community objections in January after being released from a state mental hospital. He served several years in prison for molesting young girls ages 8 to 12 years old. After his release, he was initially required to wear a GPS ankle bracelet and was monitored by Liberty Healthcare. You can receive email alerts when a sex offender moves in your neighborhood by signing up at SanDiegoCountySexOffenders.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Assemblyman Brian Jones will host a drought town hall on Thursday, August 13th in El Cajon to educate constituents about the ongoing California drought, legislative solutions, and efforts to provide relief to the community. Jones states, "As the drought continues, I've been hearing more and more from constituents who are concerned about the impact of this drought and what state and local governments are doing to mitigate its effects. The event will give constituents an opportunity to hear firsthand from local agencies and stakeholders about how this drought is impacting our region. Participating partners include Padre Dam Municipal Water District, Helix Water District, the San Diego County Water Authority, Building Industry Association of San Diego, and the Water Reliability Coalition. The event will be open to the public, and guests will have an opportunity to ask questions of participants. Topics to be discussed include, just how bad is the drought in California? What has the state done up to this point to help fight the drought? What other solutions are possible? How are local agencies handling the drought, and how can citizens help manage the drought?" The Drought Town Hall will be held Thursday, August 13th from 5 until 7 p.m. at the Ronald Reagan Community Center located on East Douglas Avenue in El Cajon. In addition to presentations from water agencies, attendees at the Drought Forum will hear from Mike McSweeney, Senior Public Policy Advisor for the Building Industry Association. He says, "We will show how new home technology will allow a family to cut their typical water use in half."
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features a discovery walk and guided tour of Mission Trails Regional Park, tropical birds at the Alpine Library, and the Mountain Empire's annual event, Pine Valley Days.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, a free concert by the San Diego Native American Flute Circle at the Mission Trails Regional Park, and movies by the lake, outdoors, under the stars in Santee Lakes Park.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
If you're a Disney fan, here's an event for you. On Friday, July 24th, Disney movie Big Hero 6 will be shown after dusk at Berry Street Park in Lemon Grove. Big Hero 6 is a 3D animated superhero comedy released by Walt Disney Pictures. It has humor, laughter, drama, heartbreak, action, and plot twists. This film is about a band of high-tech heroes who take care of the people. For more details, visit the community section at the lemongrovesca.gov website.
If you're looking for a reason for a weekend road trip, you can hop on up to Julian for hikes and hops with Vulcan Mountain Foundation and the Anza Borrego Desert Foundation on July 25th. Participants will receive a voucher for beer at Nickel Beer Company and a taste of Anza Borrego brew after the hike, which will cover 6 miles with scenic views and cool shaded groves. For more information, visit the Anza Borrego Desert Foundation website at abf.org. KNSJ89.1 FM Descanso Network.
The Mountain Empire Men's Club will present Pine Valley Days on July 24th and 25th. This mountain town's annual summer event includes a parade rolling out on July 25th at 9 a.m., plus other activities both days at the Pine Valley Park on Old Highway 80 in Pine Valley. The fun begins with a deep pit barbecue dinner on Friday night with the live music and dancing under the stars to Barbed Wire, the North American Country Music Association's International's New Country Band of the Year for 2015, and other entertainers. There will also be a craft village, a free music festival, kids zone, food from local vendors, and more. For details, visit pinevalleydays.com.
A live tropical bird show, The Music of Birds, will be presented on July 25th at 11 a.m. in the Alpine Branch of the San Diego County Library, located at 2130 Arnold Way in Alpine. Visitors will be able to play with and feed these beautiful birds at the end of the show. This event is free, so bring your friends. All ages are welcome.
If you're looking for a stirring summertime musical experience, the San Diego Concert Band will be performing at the Water Conservation Garden on the campus of Cuyamaca College on July 26th at 6 p.m. An evening of music at the garden will benefit both those nonprofit organizations. Guests are welcome to come early for a stroll through the gardens to learn some tips on how to have beautiful low-water gardens. The outdoor concert at the gardens will also feature light classics, historical themes, and modern compositions. For tickets and details, see sandiegoconcertband.com.
The Stony Bee Blues Band will perform a free concert on July 26th at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa at 6 p.m. It's all part of La Mesa's Concerts at 6 Summer Music Series.
On Sunday, July 26th, Mission Trails Regional Park will have a family discovery walk. You can come spend quality time with your family as you enjoy a walk in the outdoors. Join trail guides Marcia Stoner and Rosalie Newberger Fisher. This guided nature tour starts at the Visitor Center at Mission Trails Regional Park. For more details, go to mtrp.org.
Christian Community Theater's production of Mary Poppins continues through July until August 2nd at the Mount Helix Park Amphitheater. For tickets to enjoy this show featuring everyone's favorite nanny, you can visit cctsandiego.org.
Santee Lakes invites you to drop your line for night fishing on July 30th from 5 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Bring a lantern, but no radios, please, to keep the lake quiet for best fishing. For information, visit santeelakes.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Watermelon Days on July 31st from 1 to 7 p.m. Visitors can enjoy feeding watermelons to camels, as well as watching a camel show and an exotic bird show, savoring a barbecue, and for children, camel rides. There is also a watermelon carving contest and more. For tickets and details, visit cameldairy.com.
Santee Lakes will be hosting Movies by the Lake on Friday, August 7th. You can watch PG movie Maleficent at 6 p.m. For more information, join Facebook page Santee Lakes. Then click on Movies by the Lake Maleficent in order to join the event. For more details, go to santeelakes.com.
Saturday, August 8th, marks the first annual Sip of Julian. 8 participants are included in this event, highlighting Julian area wineries and other tasting rooms. Joining the traditional wine producers are a craft brewery, hard cider, and a mead producer, starting at 11 a.m. Visitors have 6 hours to enjoy their sips paired with locally produced appetizers. For tickets or more information, contact Julian's Chamber of Commerce at julianca.com.
On Sunday, August 9th, Mission Trails Regional Park will have the San Diego Native American Flute Circle in a free concert that begins at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. It will take place at the Visitor's Outdoor Amphitheater. You can listen to flute players who honor Native American music in a beautiful natural setting. For more details about this event, go to mtrp.org/events. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more in our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
California is ranked 38th in the nation in overall child well-being, according to the Kids Count data book released today by the nonprofit Annie E. Casey Foundation. Researchers looked at federal statistics from 2008 to 2013 and ranked the states on topics like health, education, and economics in terms of how they affect children. Jessica Midnick from Casey's California affiliate, Children Now, says the results are unacceptable in such a wealthy state.
We're the eighth largest economy in the world, and yet we have one in four kids living in poverty. And in fact, we are ranked 49th in economic well-being.
One bright spot for California kids in the report, the Golden State is ranked 14th in the country for children's health, up from 26th the year before. Midnick says the jump in the health care ranking is because California was aggressive in implementing the Affordable Care Act, and the state just decided to allow parents of undocumented children to enroll them in Medi-Cal as of next year.
As a result of policy decisions over the last few years, having all kids with health insurance is actually a possibility in this state for the first time, and that's really exciting.
In education, the survey ranks California 38th. Although Midnick says the state has made major progress recently in bringing K-12 funding back up to 2008 levels, adding 21,000 additional preschool slots for needy kids, and implementing Common Core education standards. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my special guest is John Bolthouse, who is the Executive Director with the Water Conservation Garden on the campus of Cuyamaca College. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Now, as we are in this fourth year of drought, we're hearing from the water agencies, Helix Water, and probably most of the other ones around town in East County, that we're under mandatory water conservation. That means, folks, you've got to use less water or you're going to be paying through the nose for that next water bill, effective immediately, basically. John, what are some of the things that people can learn from the Water Conservation Garden that can help them figure out how to do this?
Well, we exist to show people what you can do in your landscape that can beautify your landscape, actually enhance your landscape, but by using California native water-wise plants. And it's not just putting them in the ground. It's how do you frame them in the ground? How do you use them in different design methods? But as far as how to save water in the landscape, probably the two key issues are the right types of plants and the proper irrigation. You can have the most magnificent plants in your garden that ostensibly save lots of water, but if you don't have the right efficient irrigation, you're just working against yourself and you're not reaching your goal of saving water.
Yeah, so you have a lot of helpful displays and exhibits about this, and people can also take entire classes on irrigation and how to save water.
Yeah, we have a very rich menu of programs, both for adults and children, but many of our adult programs are directed towards homeowners, mm-hmm. HOA managers, mm-hmm. and commercial property owners. Again, showing folks what you can do in your landscape. And you know what? Just changing that perception that water-wise landscaping does not necessarily mean cactus and succulent rocks and, you know, a desert landscape. There are so many wonderful plants that are native to California that can look tremendous.
Yeah, many of them are beautiful flowers in every color of the rainbow, and yet they're low water. So it's just a delight, if you haven't been out there, to go out and walk through the garden and see some actual examples of some of these things. As well as, I might add, fire-wise landscaping and, you know, other kinds of specialty needs that people might have. Now, it isn't just water conservation issues that you cover out there. You've also got a lot of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. I see that one of the events you've got going all summer long is called the Dog Days of Summer. Tell us about that.
Well, I think as many dog owners know, it's becoming more and more difficult to find a place to take your dog to stretch its legs and actually for you to stretch your legs as well. And what a better place to bring a dog on a relatively cool summer night here in East County mm-hmm. than our Dog Days of Summer. And those are every Wednesday evening from 4 until 7 at the garden from June through August.
Right. That sounds marvelous. There's also a class called Toss the Turf if you're looking to get rid of the grass. There's some alternatives. You don't have to put in that artificial turf that can actually cause warming. It can actually, you know, create a new set of issues for you. Yeah. What are some of the other things you can do instead of lawn?
Yeah, you know, it's important to emphasize, and thank you for bringing that up, because grass is the most thirsty, water-thirsty plant that you could put in your landscape. And Southern Californians, San Diegans really need to come to the realization that the grass is part of the past.
Right.
And so, but there are alternatives. There are other ways that you can have a beautiful ground cover, low ground cover that doesn't require nearly as much water. And actually, you know, there are types of feather grasses mm-hmm. that you can mow that are water wise.
Just gonna ask that for people who maybe have young children and, or, you know, or dogs still do want to have a little bit of lawn area, even though we all acknowledge it's certainly not the best from a water-wise standpoint. But are there some forms of turf that use less water than others?
There are. And one thing we make a point at the Water Conservation Garden is that grass is not evil, inherently evil. Some people, you have pets, you have children, you want to have at least may want a little bit of grass in your garden. There are options available to you. We actually have in our turf exhibit at the garden, we have a couple of examples of relatively water-wise grass that is an option to you. But just keep in mind, grass requires much more water than other types of plants. But there are some options out there, and we have classes, and we have our demonstration gardens that can show you what those are.
Yeah. Now, I know I have an orchard, and we've been trying to figure out how to keep these trees alive and productive, or do we need to change them out for something else? And I see you've had classes in the past in growing and caring for water-saving fruit trees. Is that something that you can learn more about at the exhibits there if you come anytime?
Yes, we do. Actually, we have a veggie garden. We call it our water-wise victory garden. And we do show our patrons. Again, it all goes to the proper plants and the proper irrigation. But there are ways that you can care for citrus trees properly. Our classes are very popular in demonstrating how to care for citrus trees. Part of that class also talks about some of the insects that can put fruit trees at risk. So those are very popular. We do concede, though, that there are simply some types of trees that require a lot of water. So we don't necessarily promote those.
Yeah, avocados, for instance.
Yeah, gosh, I love avocados. We all love avocados.
But that's a very expensive guacamole when you consider what it costs to keep them.
Yes, it is.
You also have some fun classes, very creative things. I see that one of them listed for this summer is a leaf imprint glass making class to make some botanical art for your garden.
Yes, we do. We do throw in some fun things for, again, kids and adults. And mm-hmm. we're not only focused on the drought, but our art classes. You mentioned the glass making class. We've done mosaic classes, sculptures in the garden.
Music, an evening of music in the garden.
Yes.
With the San Diego Concert Band this summer, July 26th.
Yes, yes. We're really pleased to have those folks.
cheese making. Say cheese. That sounds like fun.
You know, our cooking related classes are very popular. We do a, as you mentioned, we've got the cheese making class. We have a tamale making class that's usually later in the year. We've had a tomato cooking class. You can learn about different sauces.
You're making me hungry.
Yes. It makes me hungry just thinking about it. These are all very popular classes that, and we switch them up. Some of our classes are recurring. Mm-hmm. We'll offer them multiple times during the year, and others are unique and special, offered just a one-time opportunity.
I see there's a wine and walk evening stroll in the garden of wine tasting. And you also have, now, the classes we should mention are free to people who are members of the garden. Membership, I believe, is $50. Mm-hmm. And there's just a nominal fee, a few dollars, for those who are not members to attend these classes as
That's
well.
That's right. Yeah, and I would say that most of our programs are free to the public. We do have a couple of very special VIP educators who come in from out of the region who we retain to give these programs to. So if it's not free for our members, it's certainly at a reduced fee for our members. But virtually all of our programs are open to the general public.
And I see you have VIP member events also for those, you know, some of the more major donors at the wild grape level.
Yes, as a way of saying thank you to our higher level members and donors, we do have a few very special programs for those folks.
One of those coming up is the Star Party in the Garden, which is an evening of stargazing with a local astronomer and celebrating the anniversary of the Apollo moon landing.
Yes, it'll be just one day before the, 46th anniversary of the landing on the moon. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Marvelous. Marvelous. Now, you do a fabulous event every year that's your big gala fundraising event. Tell us about what you can expect at this year's event and when it's going to be held.
Well, Miriam, it's our second annual major fundraising event. It's called The Enchanted Garden on Saturday, October 17th. It's just a magnificent event. Last year was our first one, and it exceeded all of our expectations. We had circus performers and actors in the garden. We had some just tremendous music and some exquisite cuisine. And we had about 200 people in our garden, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great fundraiser for the garden. And the theme for this coming year is water, more valuable than gold.
Isn't it true though? You also have a lot of kid-friendly events like Miss Smarty Pants school tours, for example, for the students. And of course the Butterfly Pavilion and some other things.
Yes, our Miss Smarty Plants program is it's actually nationally recognized and award-winning. It was the 2013 recipient of the Governor's Excellence in Environmental Education Leadership Award. That's a huge, huge award. And Miss Smarty Plants actually goes out into the community, and she reaches approximately 60,000 school children all throughout San Diego County. It's pretty prominent, very successful, and what Miss Smarty Plants is doing is helping kids understand and appreciate the value of water, and ostensibly to change the water habits of their parents, their teachers, the administrators, you know, kind of that trickle up influence on our, on the next generation.
Very good. Where can people go to get more information about the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College?
We are easy to find at www.thegarden.org. And we also have a very dynamic and active Facebook presence and Twitter presence as well. So like us and follow us.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Going away on summer break? An empty house is a tempting target for burglars. Don't let your vacation be ruined by a crime. Sign up for free vacation checks with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. The Sheriff's Department offers free vacation checks year-round. Let the Sheriff's Department know when you're leaving, and Sheriff's senior volunteers will perform security inspections outside your home Monday through Friday. They will check if your doors, windows, and garage are locked. They will also hide your newspapers and packages in your side fence or back patio. If they see anything suspicious, they will call for the assistance of a deputy who will determine if there's been a break-in. Upon your return, you will receive a welcome home letter listing the dates your home was checked and observations made during the visits. You can take advantage of this free service by completing a form on www.sdsheriff.net. Just look for the Vacation Home Checks box on the homepage. There's a link to a form online, which must be submitted in person at your nearest sheriff's station or substation to verify ID. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. When it comes to protecting national parks, the partisan divide between our local congressional representatives is about as wide as the Grand Canyon. Three of San Diego's congressional members have just been honored with the Friends of the National Parks Award from the nonpartisan National Parks Conservation Association for their contributions to protecting and enhancing America's national parks. Congressional members Susan Davis, Scott Peters, and Juan Vargas all voted to support national parks 100% of the time on bills tracked by the NPCA. California's two senators, Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, also scored 100%. All five of these legislators are Democrats. By contrast, San Diego's two Republican congressmen, Duncan Hunter and Daryl Issa, each scored 0%, voting against every single measure to protect national parks that the NPCA tracked in the last congressional session. That included five measures that actually passed the House of Representatives, three of which were opposed by the NPCA. Measures passed with help from Hunter and Issa include bills to weaken clean water protections and cleanup of water pollution impacting 50% of national parks, severely weaken the president's ability to protect natural and cultural treasures through the Antiquities Act, and remove protections for wildlife on waterways and national parks, including Yellowstone, Grand Teton, and Cape Hatteras Seashore. They also voted against a disaster relief bill to restore hurricane damage to national parks and historic treasures, and against a bill to protect historic battlefields. Congresswoman Davis issued a statement which reads, "I'm truly honored to receive the Friends of the National Parks Award. We have a moral obligation to sustain and preserve our historical landmarks for generations to come." The situation for national parks could get far worse, with some conservatives in Congress currently pushing to dismantle the national park system entirely and revert all public lands to state or local control, meaning some could eventually be sold off for private development, while others might be preserved by local governments. NPCA President and CEO Clark Bunting praised those who received the group's award, noting that in many areas, support for national parks was actually bipartisan, though not here in San Diego's delegation. Bunting stated, "This diverse group of representatives and senators from across the aisle and country used their votes during the 113th Congress to stand up for the natural, scenic, educational, historical, and recreational opportunities that our parks provide." He concludes, "As the national park system's centennial approaches, it's imperative that these champions fight for an increase in park funding, promote land conservation, and reduce the impacts of climate change on national parks."
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm speaking with Timothy Daniels, retired supervisory special agent of U.S. Customs, or ICE, and author of the new novel, An Ongoing Investigation. My guest, who has a long history of working with narcotic smuggling cases and money laundering, he brings a unique perspective to a border city like San Diego. An Ongoing Investigation is the sequel to his debut novel, A Target-Rich Environment, which was published in 2011. Welcome, Tim. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
And thank you for having me, Raina.
Let's begin with An Ongoing Investigation. I know the story's about a task force trying to stem the flow of narcotics coming into the U.S. from Mexico. Tell us a little bit more about what happens in the book.
Well, first, I would just like to say that I don't think most people that live in this area have any kind of clear understanding of how much narcotics come across the border just on a constant basis.
Right.
And it's thousands of pounds probably a day.
Really?
So as I neared the end of my career, I decided that I would like to try to write a book and, you know, kind of paint a picture of what it was like to work in the war on drugs, which unfortunately we're losing. But, you know, there's just a lot of stories that I accumulated over the course of my career, and I wanted people to understand, number one, the amount of drugs coming across, and then what it was like to be involved in the war on drugs, and, you know, tell some of those stories, explain how difficult it is on family life, and, you know, what it requires of somebody. So in my two books, I basically took a fictitious character, Jimmy Maxwell, and I put him in a fictional case that runs 4 or 5 months. But during the middle of that case, it's interspersed with a lot of little sub-stories of cases that I worked on, you know, where I changed some of the names and details to cover that up. But for the most part, the little sub-stories are true. The overarching story, not so much.
So you got a chance to both tell the small stories of what really goes on and give a message about this is what's happening in San Diego.
Yes. And in the first novel, I went into some of the politics involved, which were very frustrating to most of us that were involved in this kind of work. Not so much in an ongoing investigation. I basically made that more focused on Jimmy and his personal relationships and, you know, what it was like to be the target of somebody who was out there trying to get him.
Now, for how many years did you do this work?
About 23.
A wealth of experience.
Yes.
And you're retired now.
I retired at the end of 2009.
Okay. So your protagonist, Jimmy Maxwell, is he you or is he a combination of several people, made up?
He's partially me. I mean, I would like to say that I had his work ethic, and I certainly was as busy as he is in the book during the course of my career. I went through some of those same personal struggles that he goes through. But on the other hand, several of my agents that I used to work with have told me that I'm actually more Tom, his supervisor, the grumpy old guy who, you know, is having to approve everybody's reports and, you know, be that buffer between upper management and the guys working on the street. So, yeah, anyway, a little me. I will say that, Jimmy, my main character, is a bourbon drinker, and I'm right there with him.
And you're a bourbon drinker, okay. I know you worked for Operation Alliance, which was the San Diego division of the DEA, and in marine smuggling investigations. And it sounds terrible and exciting and important. Do you miss the excitement? Do you relive your work when you're writing, or...
There's some of that. Operation Alliance is I spent 16 years of my almost 23 there, and that's mostly customs agents or now ICE agents, and then there's 3 or 4 DEA groups, and then there's a half a dozen local cops and a couple of other. I think we had an ATF agent and we had a couple of Border Patrol guys, you know, and it was family. It was like family to me to a large degree.
Could you explain Operation Alliance?
It was a task force of a bunch of different agencies that was formed to work smuggling cases in San Diego, so narcotic smuggling cases. And they respond both to the ports of entry, to seizures made by Customs and Border Protection, the uniformed guys. Also, they did proactive work. Some of it stemmed from follow-ups to port cases. Some was just developed through informants. Some was tips through other law enforcement contacts, San Diego Police Department's narcotics teams. So we worked kind of a wide variety of drug cases.
And you were a team, so when you work on the book, you're sort of making that team continue, would you say? Is that it?
Well, I'm trying to let the readers know what it was like to be part of the team.
A window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you said about the influence of family, how difficult it is on family. In your books, the love interest, Margie Gray, she worries about Jimmy Maxwell's safety and about other things. Now, with the safety of law enforcement in the news so much lately, is there anything you'd like to say about that? Was safety a big stressor on you and your family the way it is for your protagonist?
Not nearly as much, probably, as is portrayed in the book. Certainly, you know, we had our moments. I've been involved in search warrants where there were shootings and different things like that, and I was actually moved out of town for a couple of months with a handful of other agents after some threats came in against us. But for the most part, I didn't really spend a whole lot of time even thinking about that. the tougher part of the work is just being on call all the time. And,
right.
and sometimes you head out in the morning and you think you're coming home at 5, but you may not come home for several days.
Really?
You know?
Okay.
You know, because you just don't know where the case is going to take mm-hmm. you. But as for safety, local police have a far riskier job than we did as federal agents.
I see.
Because they're dealing with people that they really don't know. They respond to a radio call or pull somebody over for a traffic ticket, and you don't know if it's some guy on the 10 most wanted list or
right.
somebody that just hacked his wife up. Whereas yeah. normally we knew who we were targeting, so right. we took the appropriate amount of people with us to mm-hmm. deal with that.
Could you tell us briefly one of the little stories in your book? Could you share with the listeners?
Well, one of the funny little stories involved an older lady who was in her late 70s, a white lady, and she came across the border one Friday night, and there was about 28 or 29 pounds of marijuana in the trunk of her car. and so I was interviewing her, and she just said, look, I went down with some friends of mine who live out here in El Cajon, and I had dinner, and I was getting tired, and they just said, take my car and go home. So I gave her a notice to appear. I tended to believe her. She told me who they were and the registration on the car matched.
Uh-huh.
So on Monday morning, I took another agent friend and a El Cajon police detective, and we went and knocked on the door of this couple.
Mm-hmm.
The man who opened the door was wearing a pair of leopard skin bikini briefs. His legs were about 3 inches in diameter, you know, and he had a little belly and almost bald, had probably 3 chest hairs. And then he invites us in, and, you know, we tell him why we're there. And his wife comes out, and she sits in front of us and does the Sharon Stone leg cross thing. And so I decide that, I would like to take a look around the house because he's denying everything.
Uh-huh.
Well, as we are looking around the house, there's a lot of adult-themed things, toys
right.
and gadgets.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, I went over to a closet and opened the door, and for about a half a second, I see this body falling out on me, and I actually pulled my gun. It startled me it was dark,
uh-huh.
but it turned out it was a blow-up doll.
Oh,
and
goodness.
So, of course, my partners were all teasing me that if I would have shot it, it would have went zipping around the room like a, balloon that got popped or something.
Okay. So you never know if something's going to be dangerous, serious, or a little bit light.
Or a little humorous.
Yeah, a little humorous. One last question, Tim. Tell us what's next in your sequel. I understand that you're writing sequel. When should we expect to see that?
Well, I haven't really decided whether or not I'm going to do another one. I'm leaning heavily towards it.
Uh-huh.
An ongoing investigation kind of ends just before 9/11. So I'm thinking of trying to write a story that will incorporate a little bit of that into it.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't worked out all the details yet. Both of these other books that I've written took about a year each. If I can get started in the next couple of months, obviously it would be about a year from now yeah. before it would come out.
Well, we look forward to seeing it.
Well, I look forward to doing something productive with in my retired years here. So.
I know Tim, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information on Timothy Daniels and his work, please visit his publisher's website at sbpra.com/Timothy Daniels. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is Leon Thompson with a long-range weather update from Times of San Diego. An El Nino ocean warming cycle is strengthening in the Pacific and could produce a wet winter for drought-stricken Southern California. The National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration updated its official forecast last week, saying there is a greater than 90% chance that a pattern will continue through the winter. In the new forecast, NOAA states nearly all models predict El Nino to continue into the Northern Hemisphere winter 2015 and 2016, with many multi-model averages predicting a strong event. And El Nino is a warming of the Pacific's normal surface temperature by an average of over half a degree centigrade. It is associated with significantly wetter winters in the southwest United States, including central and southern California. As of July 1st, ocean temperatures are more than a full degree above normal. El Nino is the warm phase of periodic warming and cooling of the Pacific off South America. This cycle is officially called El Nino Southern Oscillation, or ENSO. The term El Nino, which is Spanish for the Christ Child, arose because fishermen first noticed the warm ocean water around Christmas time.
The American public's attitude toward working moms is changing. A study by San Diego State University and University of Georgia researchers published in Psychology of Women found that the overwhelming majority of Americans support working mothers. They found that millennials are significantly more accepting of working mothers than previous generations were at the same age. Only 22% of 12th graders in the 2010s believed that a preschool-aged child would suffer if their mother worked, down from 34% in the 1990s and 59% in the 1970s. Jean Twenge, a psychology professor at SDSU and lead author of the study, said, quote, "This goes against the popular belief that millennials want to turn back the clock or that they are less supportive of working moms because their own mothers worked. Instead, they are more supportive," unquote. But despite the fact that most mothers with young children are working in the U.S., Twenge says, "Among industrialized nations, we don't compare very well in terms of the support we give working families for daycare and preschool. The U.S. is among only a handful of nations that do not mandate paid maternity leave, along with Lesotho, Swaziland, and Papua New Guinea. Most countries of the world provide at least 3 months of maternity leave for mothers, and many offer some benefits for fathers too," the International Labor Organization reports. Some states have passed family leave measures. California passed a law requiring businesses to give time off to new parents and caregivers 10 years ago. Despite objections from the business sector, which predicted such leave would increase costs of business, in fact, evidence points to the contrary. One survey said that almost 90% of California businesses reported no cost increases due to the law. In fact, 43% of businesses in the state reported a cost savings because they were able to hold on to more workers, decreasing training costs and reducing spending on benefits, Huffington Post reports. Companies such as Google have found that increasing paid leave boosts employee retention. Moreover, in New Jersey, women who took paid leave were 40% less likely to get public benefits such as welfare or food stamps, according to a Rutgers study. Despite such progress, only 13% of employers in the U.S. offer paid leave to full-time workers who are parents of young children, according to the most recent data from the Labor Department, and that burden falls hardest on women with low-paying jobs. Another approach to help these working parents is to offer universal preschool for all young children in the nation, a proposal that's backed by Hillary Clinton, bringing the needs of working parents and their children into the limelight on the presidential campaign trail. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barrena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.